The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Jim Behrens, author of a new book, In Our Time, Nostra Aetate, that traces the historic, peaceful engagement of the world's Catholics and Jews begun on October 28, 1965. Stick around. If this is important to Pope Francis, and it is, it should be important to the rest of us, too. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media Interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of true believers of multiple religions who all agree with John Lennon. Give peace a chance in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Like a smart lawyer, I rarely enter the professional arena without knowing everything I can about the subject at hand. Except today. I'm just being honest. When it comes to understanding the conciliar Declaration Nostra Aetate, translated from Latin, it means in our time, it's a little beyond me. Oh. I know that October 28, 2015 is the 50th anniversary of the official move to improve relations between Jewish and Catholic communities around the world. I know that its good intentions have largely succeeded. And I know that Pope Francis feels strongly about celebrating the importance of the Declaration Nostra Aetate. Now, to fill in the large gaps in my knowledge, I have called on my friend, Jim Behrens, to step up and explain it all. Behrens is the author of In Our Time, Nostra Aetate, which details the history and development of Declaration Nostra Aetate. And in the interest of full disclosure, I will tell you that In Our Time, Nostra Aetate, by Jim Behrens, was published by Mr. Media Books, a subsidiary of this here Mr. Media Interviews podcast. Jim Behrens, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks, Bob.
Listen, I know that writing a book about Nostra Aetate has been a passion project of yours for a long time. Why do you care so much about it?
Well, it goes back a long way for me. Ever since I was a kid, I've been interested in other religions, other things. It's been something that when I was born and raised Roman Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic. I was an altar boy. My parents were very devout. And I learned the Latin when we had to learn the Latin in order to say it. But I was forever interested when I listened to the gospel stories. I was forever interested in historical aspects of what was going on. And I was very curious about that, which led me to have an interest in Judaism at a very early age. So I, in a very childish way, was always looking at where Judaism and Christianity met. I remember during the Easter season when we would read things like the Passion, or we would read the book of Isaiah, which talked about the coming of a Savior. I would always be confused that this was an Old Testament passage, but it was relating to something, at least from a Christian perspective, that hadn't yet happened. So this was a very curious thing for me. So as I got older, high school and college, I began to meet more Jews, and I went to American University in Washington, which is a very large Jewish population. And in 1977, I met my wife, Ruth, in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Ruth is Jewish, and we became married in 1984. Now, at the time, we were not real observant. Neither of us was, but we felt a strong attachment to our faiths. In 1988, Ruth became pregnant, and our son, Jacob Patrick, was about to be born. We had agreed that our children would be raised Jewish. Now, all of a sudden, I was in a position where I was a Roman Catholic man having to raise a Jewish child. And that threw me for a loop. I realized I didn't know how to do that. So what I found myself doing was getting deeper and deeper into Judaism so that I could understand it, so that I could teach it to my son. So as the years went on, I became more and more involved with Judaism while I stayed close to my own faith. And what I found as time went on was that my knowledge of my own faith became much deeper the more I knew about Judaism. And I eventually took it on interfaith work as a profession, and I've continued that right to today. And Nostra Aetate is really just the latest expression of that. The book in our time is just the latest expression of that.
So what was your career before becoming involved in interfaith professionally?
Well, I was in mostly social work kind of things, community type work. I spent many years when I was in the American University in Washington, and afterwards working in probation and parole, working in communities with people who were trying to turn their lives around. That was my first passion. When I was in college, I was a sociology major. So I did that, but in the late 80s, and about the time that our first child was born, I began to be called in a different direction. And in 1989, after Jacob was just born, I found an organization in Reston, Virginia, outside of Washington, called Reston Interfaith. And I became involved working there. And that led to me working as the director of the food bank here in St. Petersburg. And then I became a lead organizer, community organizer, for a group called Congregations United for Community Action. And then I became the executive director of the Center for Catholic Jewish Studies at St. Leo University. So it all kind of has built over the years. But it all started back there when I was a kid, and I was trying to figure that out.
And I think it's fair to point out that it was not your only interest as a kid. I know you as a you're a sports fan.
Obviously, sure.
You're very interested in your kids. You have a wife and family, so you're not living in a cave, obviously.
No, yeah, right.
And so let's go to Nostra Aetate itself.
Yeah.
When did you first become aware of it? The Declaration.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, when I was young, I mean, I was in 1965. I was 11. When it was published or promulgated, as they say, in October of 1965. I was involved in the church at that time. I knew things were going on in Rome. I knew about the Second Vatican Council, and I began to know about the details of that. So it was pretty early, but the real details about Nostra Aetate didn't become evident to me until after I began to get interested in Judaism as being more a part of my life. And I began to read the writings of many people, but one of them, and probably the most influential, was a fellow by the name of Eugene J. Fisher. Dr. Fisher was the Associate Secretary of the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops. And he was, and I think it's fair to say that he's the most prominent Catholic lay person in the United States in the past 50 years on the field of interfaith relations. And so I began to read Dr. Fisher's work in the many books that he's done. And it was there I began to learn in much more detail what Nostra Aetate was all about.
All right, and so let's talk about that. I mean, who first had the idea of taking the notion of better and friendlier relations between Catholics and Jews and formalizing it in this declaration?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because that's what the book says. That's exactly what the book does. It tells that story of where it emerged, from where did it emerge. And it's a long story, as you might imagine. In the book, I condense it down to, 122 pages, but it covers 2,000 years of history. And the short version of it is that the church was involved in almost 2,000 years of a very negative relationship with the Jewish people. And after the Second World War, and in the aftermath of the Holocaust, the founding of the State of Israel, and all the changes that began to happen in the world, there was a great sort of yearning, I think, by the world community to do something about these terrible things that had happened during the Second World War. And at that time, in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, the new Pope, Pope John the 23rd, called the church to a council. The second time, the first Vatican Council was in the 1800s. This is the second Vatican Council. And his whole idea was to, as he said, aggiornamento in the Italian, to update the church. And while that was going on, he began to put together many pieces. And one of the pieces that he put together was to meet with a French philosopher by the name of Jules Isaac, someone who he had learned about and met during his years, during and after the Second World War. And Jules Isaac was very prominent in developing the notion that Christianity had very deep roots in being involved in anti-Semitism. So Pope John, in meeting with Jules Isaac, began to understand that better. And so he called together prominent Catholics and quite a few Jews as well to say, we want to deal with this problem of our relationship with the Jewish people throughout the years. So we want to put that into the changes that we're going to make, the aggiornamento that's going to happen as a result of the Second Vatican Council. So it got into the council, many people began to work on it, and in 1965, as the last document of the council, there were many documents, as the last document of the council, this document came out.
Is it coincidence that this happened at the cusp of the whole make love not war, flower power, peace and love era? Is it just coincidence?
Of course not. It's and as I tell the story around in many places, people are surprised, I think, when I fold it into the many changes and the freedom movements that were going on around the world at exactly the same time. In fact, what I say is that Nostra Aetate was one of the major civil rights accomplishments of the 20th century. And so that's the way that I frame it. And it is a very much a child of the times.
And it's interesting that Pope John was very moved to make changes to the church. And as we're approaching the 50th anniversary, we have Pope Francis, who was probably as big a shaker and a break maker and shaker and mover of things in the church as there may have been since then. I mean, John Paul gets a lot of credit for being well-liked, but he didn't make the kind of social and religious changes that Pope Francis is pushing. Is there a parallel between the two?
Between
Pope John and Francis?
Well, you know more about this topic than you're admitting, because many people make that comparison with Pope Francis as being very fatherly and pastoral in his approach, which does really harken back. If you think of the popes between Pope Francis and back to John the 23rd, the popes in between had many types of personalities, but these were the two that were really kind of fatherly, and they'd put their arms around you and they'd want to make you feel good and that kind of thing. So yeah, there are many things that they share. Absolutely.
And it's very different going, of course, from John Paul II to Benedict to Francis. Benedict, if the church, I think, had gone from John Paul II right to Francis,
right,
there's sort of a continuity there of a human touch. But Benedict, in the middle of him, sometimes felt like a very harsh middle-aged, right, middle ages kind of religious figure.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, yeah, that was, and that's why it's important to think in terms of the different personalities of the people who held that job. John Paul II was an extremely important pope in terms of Catholic-Jewish relations, too.
Okay.
And in truth, when he died, the Jewish community around the world mourned, along with the Catholic community, because there was a great affinity between the Jewish people and John Paul II, which went back to his childhood in Poland. But I think that's right. In a sense, Pope Benedict kind of created a bridge, I think, and in our minds allowed us to make that transition from the extremely long pontificate of John Paul II to this new type of pontificate, which harkens back to John the 23rd, but it's new in our lifetimes, new in our generation, to see a pope like this. Maybe it's new from forever, really.
It's interesting to me, too, that a lot of people think that in the United States, President Obama is the most progressive president ever, and if you don't like progressive politics, you don't care for that. And probably no one would have guessed that there'd be another world leader who would be as progressive in so many ways as he. But Francis has kind of turned out to be that guy. He retains certain, you know, the more conservative aspects of the church. But even today, as we're talking, word comes down that he's loosened up the rules on annulment, right?
Right.
And
right.
I mean, it's just really interesting the focus that he's taken. I see a lot of similarities in kind of the humanistic approach between him and Obama. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just the layman's view, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. I'm sure that there were a lot of people who would say that the Pope is a socialist just like Obama. That's what people would say. But I take your point.
Yeah. Well, why should the average person be moved to care about the 50th anniversary of the Declaration Nostra Aetate? Which I'll point out again, October 28th, 2015.
Right. Well, I tell you, it's something that's happened. The changes that have gone on since 1965 have happened pretty quietly. And really, one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, that I wanted to put this little book out was to kind of raise that up so that the people who have been involved in the changes very quietly could begin to put a name on why those changes were happening. And so, for instance, all of the changes that have happened in terms of textbooks, teachings in religious schools, teachings in Catholic schools, teachings in seminaries that have happened over the last few generations have created a new awareness of the affinity between Catholics and Jews. So by and large, Catholics in the world today, young Catholics in particular, aren't to tell this story about how Catholics used to not go into synagogue, be forbidden to go into synagogues, or there was this harsh treatment between Catholics and Catholics of Jews. Young people nowadays who've come up with the new teaching, they find that very strange. and they don't relate to it. And that tells us how far the teaching has come, that it's not even in the wheelhouse of most people of a generation today, particularly in the Western world and certainly in the United States. But people don't really understand where it came from. They don't connect the dots. They don't understand that their feelings of openness, their sense of connection, their brotherly or sisterly connection to between Catholics and Jews is a reason that happened. And the reason, the place that it began was in Nostra Aetate. So to know that story better is to know ourselves better and to know from where our beliefs spring. And so putting the historical connection on it, putting words to it, saying Nostra Aetate, saying the declaration on the church and non-Christian religions, saying these things so that people can understand it, forces us to go, aha, have an aha moment and say, this is important and this is where it came from. So.
All right, so one more question for you. We're rapidly approaching the anniversary date. The Pope will be in the United States later this month, September 2015.
Right.
How will the 50th anniversary be celebrated in this country and around the world?
Well, there's no particular event that'll be going on in terms of commemoration, but there have been many hundreds, thousands of commemorations that really began within the past year around the world. And that are continuing now. In fact, if you just Google Nostra Aetate commemorations, you would begin to get all the things that have been happening and will continue to happen around the world in advance of that. But I think that Pope Francis coming to America at this time in September, a month before the 50th anniversary, coming to speak to the United Nations while he's here, I think it'd probably be very appropriate, not at all surprising, if he were to mention Nostra Aetate in his address to the United Nations, particularly as the anniversary is getting ready to come up. And I think awareness will build. I'm sure awareness will build as he talks about it, deals with it, and we get closer to the anniversary. So,
all right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Jim Barron's new book, In Our Time, Nostra Aetate, in great stores everywhere. I can tell you from personal experience, I know that it is $6.99 in paperback, and you can download it as an ebook for $2.99, get it instantly that way. It's available on all the ebook platforms. You can get it for the iBook. You can get it for Amazon Kindle, for the Nook. I'm probably forgetting some. Kobo. It's pretty much available anywhere you get your ebooks from. And you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching this show on MrMedia.com, you probably know already that below the video, to the left or the right, you'll see a copy of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon. You can order the book in any format that you want, paperback or ebook, and get it there. Jim, do you have a website or somewhere people can come to learn more about the book?
Yeah, well, several. My main website, which I've run for many years, is called thejusticefactory.org. One word, thejusticefactory.org. It's concentrated on community organizing. I also have a Facebook page dedicated to the book. And so the name of the Facebook page is the name of the book, In Our Time, Nostra Aetate. And there's a lot of information there that is related to the topic that I'm glad I'm able to put up.
And are you on Twitter as well?
I am. I'm on Twitter as well. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
How do people find you on Twitter? What's your handle?
You know, I've got to look that up.
All right, folks, I will have it on the page with this interview.
Yeah.
You trust me, I'll find it for you, folks.
Good.
All right. Well, Jim Barron's my friend, and I'm very excited that I got to publish the book. I think it's a big deal, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thank you, Bob. It's great. It's been a lot of fun.
deceiver. Turn your back on the deceiver. It's a bad idea to believe her. A bad idea to believe her. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.